that, or do we consider non-sensitive?
That's an interesting point, Thomas. We can certainly...
That's all review of data elements.
Yeah.
And how should people deal with that? That's a concept. Glenn, talking about too many conference calls, there is nothing in the next 2 or 3 weeks on the registry services PDP, right?
Not as far as I know, Thomas. There was tentatively supposed to be something this week, but nothing has materialized.
Good.
And as far as I know, there's nothing next week, and it's the week after that there's the .NET and the council call, plus all the task force calls.
.NET is on 4th, Council is on
6th. And Council is on Thursday 6th.
Okay.
And they're both very European friendly times.
That's good.
Council is when?
Council is.
Sorry to everybody else.
At 2 o'clock on Thursday the 6th.
Oh, great.
And the .NET is at 5 o'clock on Tuesday the 4th.
Okay. Thank you.
And the other calls, as far as I know, will be as usual.
Give people another minute or two to join before we dive into this.
Hi, Kathy joining. Sorry to be late.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
Hello.
Actually, haven't started really talking yet. Glenn, can you just tell me once more who we have on the call?
Hi, I'm Jordan. We have David Maher, Kathy Kleinman, Thomas Keller, Nicholas Lagergren, and Thomas Rusler. So we have nobody from business. There is nobody from ISP. And the other constituencies are represented. So it's ISP and business missing.
Right. Okay, we'll give this 1 or 2 minutes.
Hi, this is Maggie Mansorkia.
Hi, Maggie. Okay, so at this point we're just missing Marilyn, so I'm going to go ahead and kick this off. Just in terms of our agenda for this call is pretty straightforward. It's an open policy discussion at this point, and I want to have a dialogue a little bit about how we want, what people's perspective on how to move the policy discussion forward is. One approach is that we could simply discuss a subset of some of the issues that I posed, and Thomas has raised one more already on this call, and allocate some time to try to see if we can't make some headway talking through some of those issues. Another approach that we could take would be to allow people from the constituencies to propose maybe various specific policy recommendations, and we could talk through them as a group and see whether or not we can't get them in a form that's acceptable to be adopted by the task force. Does people have thoughts about which approach they might prefer, or some other approach?
So why don't we just talk about all the subjects we listed in your email? I guess that's a good way to start.
Sure, okay, and then we can get to some of those specific policy proposals from there. If we're going to do that, I'm going to try to keep an eye on, I'm going to be a little bit selective about how we proceed through the topics and also keep an eye on time, because some of these I think just have the potential to be conversations where we can discuss them forever without making necessarily a huge amount of headway. But I think it may be useful to discover where we have overlap and agreement, and where there's substantial and sharp disagreement that seems irreconcilable. So having said that, I'm going to suggest that maybe we kick this off with the broadest of these questions and keep at most a 10-minute dialogue on this, which is the purpose of who is, which Kathy had raised last time. And I think it is helpful, I think, to start to frame some of our conversations by getting a grounding in what we think the who is supposed to be doing. And I think a lot of other assumptions will end up stemming from that. So I'm just going to keep a cue, I guess, and try to maybe interject the occasional leading or clarifying question, but mostly, since I'm not in a role of providing any advocacy here, just try to facilitate the conversation. So,
Jordan, can I make a suggestion?
Sure.
No, feel free to disregard. But would it be possible for everybody to go around? I know we did it last time, and I thought it was helpful, just on this particular topic, and say what their statement said on this issue. And then,
I'm not sure all the statements did necessarily say something.
But to the extent that they did.
Yeah, but I'd just like to make it broader, I guess. I think that is useful in this case. Why don't we go around? But people can feel free to either state what their statement said or what they think personally or what they know their constituency believes or whatever, and perhaps clarifying each of those things as to what you're actually talking about would be helpful. So why don't we go around in seemingly random order of how I wrote people's names down, starting with Nicholas. You there, Nicholas? Okay, we'll skip him. Thomas Rossler.
Oh, you're asking first.
I'm asking you first to tell us what you think the purpose of who is in a minute and 90 seconds or less.
Oh my god. I guess the basic point we have concerning the purpose of who is that, strictly speaking, from an individual user perspective, there is no unique purpose or no purpose unique to individual users that would justify the collection and public display data. However, whois data can be a tool in legal struggles, for instance. And that tool should be available on equal footing to individual users and to other classes of users. So what this boils down to is individual users don't justify who is and don't provide a purpose justifying who is. If any other, don't provide a purpose justifying who is. On the other hand, it's safe to say that individual users are using who is for probably just about any purpose as anyone else does. So we are carefully avoiding to say anything on the purpose, on what we believe to be the actual purpose of who is. The one thing we do say about purpose in our decision, in our advice, was that data users should be asked to identify the purpose for which they want to access the data, and that this should be made accessible to data subjects. Data subjects must know for what purposes their data are being used by third parties, and these purposes must be legitimate with the original purpose of collecting the data. Original purpose of collecting the data is a different concept from purpose of who is. The original purpose of collecting the data is to facilitate the domain name registration contract. It's billing, it's contact between parties to a contract. So what we have to ask is, what purpose are data users asking for? What purpose do data users want to use the data for? And is that purpose compatible or not with the purpose, with original purpose of collecting the data, namely fulfilling the contract?
Thomas, can I just ask a clarifying question? So is it the view of the ALAC that there is a purpose in collecting some or all of the data displayed in Whois for registration purposes, but not necessarily for display in the Whois?
The one purpose that's, well, relatively obvious and that often will be the basis for actually collecting the data is to enter into the contract and to conclude that contract. If I want to get a bill to my home address, then I have to give them my home. I have to give the registrar my home address. Otherwise, I'm not going to get that letter. That's not to say that to fulfill the contract, there is an immediate need to collect all the data elements. You can quite as well collect no data elements or no personal data at all, and just have people identify themselves through a shared secret through some kind of attack. You can have people send you cash in an envelope. So I'm not saying that the collection of data is logically necessary to perform domain name registration, but I'm saying that some business models may require it. And that's the purpose of the collection of data from which I would start an analysis.
Okay, great. So let's move on. Nicholas, are you around now?
Yeah, this is Steve Metallic.
Oh, it's Steve Metallic.
Also.
Just as good. So we're just going around. We are, Steve, just, have you been on the call the whole time or you just joined?
I joined about 30 seconds.
Okay. So just to give you a background on where we are, we're briefly having a dialogue about the purpose of who is, and I'm just eliciting people's viewpoint on this, and either whether it be the, as outlined in your constituency statement, what you know to be your constituency position or your own personal position, and you may want to clarify what you're actually speaking to.
Well, it's not part of our constituency statement since it's not part of the task of this task force. We tried to answer the questions that the task force was asked to address. My personal view is that the purpose of who is to enable someone to contact the entity or person that's responsible for a domain name registration or for a site to which the domain name resolves.
Okay, that's pretty straightforward. Tom Keller.
Yes, we actually even covered in our statement, and as far as I know, it's in the overall belief of the registrar that the original purpose used to be to be able to contact someone if there may be certain technical problems that could reach someone. But that stems back from a time where you didn't have a lot of users and the people were depending on that. Back then, not all the data we see right now has been in that Whois database, but it more or less only identified people who you could contact with technical problems, more or less. So we see that there are a lot of different uses of Whois right now, and I guess the purpose of Whois changed quite a bit, and so we think that as the uses change, the way who is this working and what it is displaying should be changed to establish some kind of a fairness between users and people who are the data subject.
Great, thanks. Kathy?
We think that the, you know, it's in our comments, that the original purpose of the WHO is and the current purpose of the WHO is should be synchronized, and that we should go back to that and establish that. And what we say in our comments is the purpose of the WHO is originally was identification of domain name of domain owners for purposes of solving technical and operational problems. Then we say this is kind of the scope of ICANN and what its mission is technical and operational, and that accordingly we think the purpose of any tool that ICANN creates through this contractual system should be within ICANN's purpose itself, which ICANN told the U.S. government recently was the technical management of the DNS. So the purpose of the WHO should be for finding technical and operational information regarding the domain name.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks.
David Maher.
I agree with Kathy's position that the registry constituency hasn't yet produced a statement, although I'm hoping we will very shortly. But in general, the registry position has been that the purpose of WHOIS is technical information, and anything beyond that in terms of finding out the person who is registered domain name should be carved out as an exception to the general rule that the purpose is purely technical and the data is purely internal to the registries and registrars.
Great. Okay, and Maggie.
Okay, we only briefly touched on this in our statement, but essentially the ISP's view is that the purpose of WHOIS is to provide contact information for the registrant for purposes that are necessary for the for a variety of interests. And I guess we can, depending on how you define technical and operational, we may or may not agree with that statement. But we believe that law enforcement and civil investigation uses are legitimate, and they should be part of WHOIS contact information. And we expressly in our statement reject the notion that should be technical for technical purposes only, that WHOIS information is collected and displayed.
Great. So I guess what you're suggesting, depending on what the scope of operational is, you may or may not agree with the statement that it's technical and operational.
That's right. If there is a website on one of my servers that is violating a civil or criminal law, I have a very distinct interest in the operation of that website and to see that it comes down.
Sure. Okay. And I trust Marilyn has not joined the call yet, just to make sure. Great, okay. So we won't get a statement from the BC, but it sounds like with the exception possibly of the ALAC, that there's fairly widespread agreement on this, that the purpose of WHOIS is to provide contact information for... And then the agreement breaks down into whether it's purely for technical purposes or for contacting the owner slash registrant, which I think is what Steve suggested, versus technical and a broad range of operational issues that include civil and law enforcement matters, as Maggie suggested. Those distinctions, I guess, probably define some of what the various views are on what needs to be gathered and what doesn't. Let me propose another question, which is, given that for those of you that think that it's important to be able to contact people for non-technical purposes, whether that be law enforcement or civil investigation or whatever else, I don't know what other uses also might be advocated. I think we've got fairly widespread agreement in the constituency statements that marketing is not one of those appropriate uses. What is the... Is it necessary that the information be publicly available in order to fulfill that need? And I guess I would look to Maggie and Steve in particular to answer that question.
Well, I guess the short answer is that if a member of the public needs it, it would need to be publicly available. Members of the public have a need to be able to contact the registrant for a variety of purposes. I see now that you sent out questions, and you asked what is the purpose, and some of the answers you got is what was the original purpose, and how has it changed? And that may be an interesting discussion, but if we look at the kinds of interest that people have in accessing this data, many members of the public would have such an interest, and to that extent, they have public access to it. That doesn't necessarily mean that every member of the public has the same interest, because there needs to be some mechanism for members of the public to get access to this information, in my view.
And I come from the position, I guess both as the privacy person within my company as well as our general company policy, which I think is very much in line with the ISPs that are active within ICANN, is that it should be available to the absolute least number of people or least types of people as possible. So to say that it should be available to the public seems a little incongruous with that. But then if we keep it, I guess there's, in this instance, with that same principle of allowing the least number of people to see it and only people who need to have access to have access to it, I don't see any way of limiting any particular portion of the public from the data. I think the focus should be on the need, and instead of whether it's a member of the public or it's an organization or law enforcement. I think because there are different uses, and most of them are legitimate, as long as the use and the need for having access to the data is a legitimate one, then it should be anyone that needs it to have access to it, and I guess that would be defined as open to the public.
Right. Let me ask you this, Maggie. Does that imply that it would be that you view and the ISPs view it as being necessarily, you know, available to anyone in the public on a continuous basis, or would the position be of the ISPs be that you would be open to a solution where each request for the information had to be somehow, the need had to be demonstrated somehow?
I think it's fair to require the individual requesting the information to show that there is a need for it. I don't think that in any cases it makes sense to make that be a very onerous or time-consuming step, but I do think it's fair to make that requirement and that each instance be a case-by-case rather than having unlimited viewing by any entity or any type of individual. I think as long as there's some kind of reasonable mechanism controlling each request, then that's a good way to go about it.
Sure, and I'm not actually sure it's necessarily in the scope of this task force to figure out what that mechanism would necessarily look like, but I'm just trying to sort of probe for where we stand. Steve, if I pose that same question to you,
Wait a minute, so www.
have a thought in terms of, do you or the IPC have a view as to whether or not that would be a palatable type of situation?
And that is what?
Sorry, I missed.
What was the answer?
The answer was, you say, whether that would be a palatable situation. What
whether the notion of instead of the who is of the full who is data being available sort of continuously through, you know, a public access mechanism, that each request for specific information, that some sort of need had to be demonstrated for the information.
I think there are some practical problems. I think in theory there's not a problem with that. In practice, I think there are a lot of it brings in a lot of issues. One question, of course, is how long it takes to determine whether the person has a need that would be recognized. The second is, what would be the list of acceptable needs? Third is, who would decide whether the person's need is acceptable? The fourth is, who would decide whether the person actually has that need? Or are they just saying, are they misrepresenting that need? So there are a number of issues that would have to be resolved, and the ability to obtain this access through a rapid real-time process would be jeopardized, and as well through a process that doesn't impose the process you're talking about. It seems to me would impose very significant costs. Now, Thomas has indicated that the registrars might be willing to absorb those costs, but whether they're it's absorbed by them or paid by somebody else, there would be a lot of costs involved. Seems to me.
Sure. Yeah, that's understood. I guess. Let me ask you this as a follow-up, Steve. You and other people, if you have thoughts or comments, certainly feel free to raise your hand. Virtually speaking, the IPC, at least in theory, I think in your constituency statement, suggested that you were supportive of the notion of the proxy registrations that, as they occur right now.
Right.
If someone's performed a proxy registration, haven't they essentially sort of hidden their information subject to someone demonstrating a need for it? Don't we end up with exactly the situation we're discussing
right
now?
Yeah, and that's why we think that what this task force ought to do is find out more about how the proxy registration services work. It may be that the costs that they impose are tolerable, that it's working reasonably well, and that it provides a reasonably good model for people who want to suppress that information for public access to do so. It may be that could be part of the solution here, but there are a lot of unanswered questions about what exactly the costs are. I'm not talking about financial costs, but in terms of delay and what the process is for determining who gets access and so forth. That, I think, would be a fruitful area for this.
Do you hear the other call?
Jordan?
Yeah?
Could you put me in line?
Yeah, absolutely. Why don't you go ahead right now?
Okay, great. I'm just having a question for Steve. It's regarding the costs. I mean, I'm not quite understanding what costs should be imposed on the user. I mean, the only cost I could imagine there would be is like an initial cost to verify yourself. But besides that, it will be a free service like you have on the web right now, but it's just a different tool. You can get as freeware or something like that. So this cost factor is being brought up, and I don't really know what that issue about that is.
Well, let's just go back to the questions I raised in response to Jordan. How would the list of acceptable uses be determined?
Okay. Do you think it would help if we would not define or would not define what is acceptable, but would rather do it the other way around and define what is not allowed? I mean,
well,
that's a way shorter process.
it is, and that's kind of the status quo. When I do a whiz query, I generally I agree that I will not use it. You know, this language is taken from the contract. I will not use it to launch high volume. I can't remember the exact wording. But high volume inquiry. I'm not using it to launch a high volume inquiry to the server. That could be adapted to say, and I will not use it for marketing purposes or whatever the test would be. So that, to me, that's kind of the status quo.
Okay, and if that is, would be out of the game, so I'm still interested in the cost factor.
Well, then the question is, would there be, I raised the other question. Would you, your proposal, for example, says that there should be a, that access to a richer database of who is, although still much less than what's provided today, should be made available only to a known user for a known use.
Yes.
Now, how do you authenticate who the user is, and how do you authenticate? I mean, you're saying now maybe you don't need to know what his use is as long as it's not one of the prohibited uses.
That's correct.
But how would you authenticate who the user is, or would that be an issue?
Well, I guess the answer to that is that it's out of the scope of our task force. So the only thing we could probably set is say, well, that might be a solution. So task force one, who is concerned about things like that, would have to find a solution what would be a not too costly exercise to identify users. That could be done, for example, by some kind of a registering system with an icon, or you could do it through SSL certificates, which don't cost too much anymore, or something like that. So it's not like a real costly service that you have to get. Just make sure that you are providing who you are, which is just fair in my view.
Right, and let me just add to that one ongoing effort that we're struggling with as part of the Whois work and within ICANN generally, it seems like, is the idea of validating who, you know, making sure we have accurate information about who registrants are. Seems like once we've solved that problem, we ought to be able to figure out who those people that are registering to use the Whois would be as well.
Well, I think that's a false symmetry, and I see it cropping up repeatedly, but in fact, there's a big difference. If I'm a parent and my child is visiting a website and I'm interested to find out who has registered that website that my baby has invited my child to visit, and I'm concerned about something that's on that website, I am not thrusting myself into the public arena the same way that the registrant of that website is. I'm just trying to find out who it is that my child is dealing with. Now, why should I have to be just as public about that as the registrant should be about who he or she is?
Jordan?
There's a big difference, it seems to me, in those two situations. And I think to say, well, because we need to know who the registrant is, we also need to know the same way who the requester is glib, but I don't think it's very accurate.
Yeah, sorry, I'm going to make one comment, then I'll let Kathy. Steve, I'm not suggesting that we necessarily verify and publish information about requesters the same way we would with Whois data, but that once we've solved the problem of being able to do a good job of verifying identity on the process of registration, we ought to be able to apply that process probably in a way that would help us figure out who a requester is as well. So I'm just thinking purely a mechanism as opposed to what we do with the data at the end of the process.
I would like to get in line as well, Jordan.
Sure. So I'm going to go to Kathy and then Tom.
Yes. I want to talk about two situations. One is where we're looking at where users can get a hold of this data for reasons short of due process, and then I want to talk about due process for a second. As I was listening to Steve, it occurred to me that we're talking about here a set of users who are trying to get a hold of this reason, this information, you know, this, the website case that Steve posed, for reasons short of due process. You're trying to find out, you're basically getting access to the name, address, phone, and email of whoever's running that website, and you've got legitimate, one would say legitimate reasons, and you're accessing that short of due process. The reason why in that situation you'd want to identify who the user is because of the massive number of abuses that can take place from gaining exactly the same type of access to that information. And we outline these in our comments. I think there's lots and lots of illegitimate uses of this data, and they're taking place, and there's more information than ever about these abuses, identity theft, spamming, including masquerading as your own registrar for renewals. We now know that there's stalking taking place out of this data. Overly broad threats, frankly, from intellectual property groups who are using this data to kind of reach out to individuals and scare them a lot and to back off on content. And just kind of basic violations of personal property. So when you're getting access to this type of personal information short of due process, I think there is a real reason to identify who the users are in case they abuse it. God forbid they go out and stalk somebody and kill them. You'd kind of want to know who that is. So one line in the sand that is given to us might be national law, due process. There are reasons in the telephone system for ISPs who have people who are, you know, in chat rooms under identities. There's all sorts of standards that are created under law for when you reveal the identity of people with unlisted information. And each country has dealt with this differently, but each country has a standard, and that's, you know, accessible and usable, and it's there, and it's not something we, you know, ICANN would put itself in the position of having to negotiate. It exists and could be applied. And then I don't think you would have to identify who the user is, except to whatever the court is or the administrative process or the police or whoever gets access to the data, because it's already taken care of.
Great. Thanks, Kathy. And Tom?
Okay, first thing I want to mention is that just in case talking about websites, there are, for example, laws in Germany which bind the people who have a commercial website at least to show and reveal to the public who they are, and if they're not doing that, they can be sued. So that's one thing, that there are already different things in place to figure out who is running a website. The other thing is that if you have a child and that child is looking at a website and you want to figure out who that person is, at least under our proposal, you still get the information. So you know who that person or company is, and you know where that company or person is living, at least in the country. The only thing we think should not be revealed at that point of time is the real personal information of that person. So if you really want to have the email address, you don't need the email address and the telephone number to figure out who is that person your children is watching the website at. So that, you know, if you want to have that private information, you should be able to provide your own credentials in the same way, just to show it to that person who is the data subject in some way. That's just to create some kind of fairness in the whole system and kind of have a barrier against abuses.
Okay, so one concept that's cropped up a couple times in this dialogue has been the notion of, and it's a question I raised as well, it's also addressed in a couple of constituency statements in a less favorable light, which is there, do we think that there's a useful distinction between commercial and non-commercial registrants and the type of information that is displayed about them? I know at least one constituency statement has said that there's not a useful distinction, but does anyone else have thoughts on this?
This is Maggie. I don't think there should be a distinction, because our experience has been that there are equally nefarious actions taken on both types of websites. Just because something is not commercial in nature doesn't mean that it isn't criminal in nature, or that it is completely free of illegal activity.
Sure. I would guess that the from our perspective at least, one of the reasons raised as to why the information is so sensitive in some cases is that for a person, your admin contact and your registrant can often be someone's, you know, home address and home phone number.
Yes.
Whereas in the case of a company, the information ends up representing, you know, company headquarters and the number answered by a, you know, IVR or something like that. So I think that seems to be more where, you know, the distinction becomes relevant than in terms of whether or not it's likely that one will be used for a nefarious purpose or the other.
Just to clarify that, you're talking about should there be a distinction in what data is shown on the WHOIS, whether it's a company or a private person, is that correct?
Sort of. I'm not making quite a specific question of that, but whether or not, you know, it's useful to think about, you know, are we more comfortable displaying information about commercial entities than we are about non-commercials is sort of a general concept, and then we could follow that up with, you know, does it make sense to translate that into some specific recommendation with regards to WHOIS?
Well, it's a registrar opinion that might be difficult to do, so certain people who don't want to have their data being published just create some kind of a company. That's like a process. In Germany, which doesn't even cost money. I can say I'm a company, and then I'm a company, and that's 100% legal. So it might be hard to determine whether a person actually is a person or a company.
Kathy, and then Thomas.
I see where you're going on this, and it's interesting, and I think we should talk about it. But let me talk about it, and maybe the reverse way. Before we were talking about the uses that are allowed, and somebody suggested, well, I think maybe you, what uses, you know, maybe we can say what uses are not allowed. In this case also, there are businesses out there, entrepreneurs, home-based businesses, where they're putting out personal information as well, and where they may not be dealing with the public. They may not have that website that's reaching out to Steve's daughter. They may be just purely business-to-business. Lots and lots of businesses in that situation. Let me also point out there are commercial businesses that have, at least in the U.S., have free speech rights, including some anonymity rights. If you're a family planning clinic, there are rights for you not to be listed in certain directories because you're going to get bombed. And you could be a commercial entity and do that. So how about the concept, let me just throw out the concept of reversing it, that it becomes an opt-in. If you're a commercial entity, if you're dealing with consumers, so if you're a business to consumer, you have the option of always putting your data into the WHOIS so that people can find you, so that it's a mark of integrity, that we don't take that option away from people, even if certain constituencies have proposed removing data elements, but that we keep this as an option. So you can always put that data in, so it can always be available in the WHOIS. And national law may follow suit and require you, if the option is available, to list it accurately and to provide law enforcement actions if you don't.
Right. So just to clarify that proposal, you'd say that essentially registrars would still have an obligation to, and registries, to maintain WHOIS services, but information wouldn't be published in them unless the registrant opted to put the information there. Is that the proposal?
Exactly. Or at least in these fields, the registrant and administrative contact, the ones that invoke the personal concerns of both individuals and many small businesses and small non-commercial organizations.
Interesting. Okay. Thomas?
I think I agree with the basic argument that Kathy is making, namely, think about commercial versus individual registrant in terms of services and in terms of services, in terms of incentives, and in terms of perception. Some scenarios, maybe. Individual users have big incentives to keep their home addresses private. The corporation, the business that wants to deal with the public, certainly does not have these incentives. As Kathy said, they have an incentive to demonstrate transparency, if I can quickly, as a consumer, can quickly get to contact information that creates trust. Say, we have an incentive for good businesses to make information about them available. On the other hand, bad business may not want to make information available, but that at the same time can be a red flag for consumers. So not having information about a business can just be the piece of information that a consumer needs to make the right kind of a decision. That said, what could the policy proposal be? Something like saying a consumer who proves he's just using his website in a non-commercial way can keep information private and the business has to publish it? I don't see the benefits to that kind of policy, which will have enforceability problems, over just relying on the basic incentive and providing a publication service to Regis Plant in this case. I think it's much easier if we rely on responsible behavior on the side of business registrants, and if we rely on the incentive that they are getting in the marketplace that will deal with a lot of stuff in this region. So I don't think it makes much sense to separate between business and individual or non-commercial registrants in terms of whose policy makes the default the privacy protection on individual needs and give registrants the option to publish more information on who is.
Okay, so it sounds like there's not a lot of support for the idea of somehow making distinctions between commercial and non-commercial users, but I think Kathy and Thomas sort of separately have broadly proposed the idea that a very limited set of data be published in the WHOIS, and that essentially due process national law mechanisms be used to make additional information available, and that would be, I guess, the standard for proving whether or not you have a need. I invite some additional comments maybe on this idea. I know it seems like maybe Maggie or Steve, maybe, do you guys have thoughts on this?
Well, this is Steve. I have two thoughts. One, I don't think due process is a very useful concept in this environment because it's a U.S. legal concept that basically deals with the relationship of the individual to the government. And when the government can compel something to happen or can do something, that's not the situation we have here. But whatever label you put on it, I think it is a legitimate question in the proxy services that we have now. How is it working? On what basis is this information being made available? We have a standard in the contract. The contract says reasonable evidence of actionable harm. But what does that mean in practice? I think that's a legitimate question, and you know, we may find that it's the right balance or the wrong balance, but we don't know at this point. The other concern I have about the due process is that, again, in the scenario I'm talking about, the parent doesn't want to file a lawsuit to get something. They want to find out, you know, should they tell their kids to go to another site or not, or you know, tell them to go away from the computer or not. It's almost a casual one-time use in some cases, but that's what they may be. They're not looking to bring a lawsuit. This is not really.
Can I ask a question, Bert?
What they're after. The only other point I would raise here in terms of the individual and who is the administrative contact, one thing that I know has come up a few times over the last 4 or 5 years we've been discussing this is whether there should be a standard definition of what administrative contact is, or for that matter, what contact is, because I think with Rick, exception. The registrant isn't really given any guidance. They're given a form that says, okay, who are you? Who's your administrative contact? Who's your technical contact? But not any definition about what you should enter in either of those entries. And I imagine there's a lot of inconsistency. I bet a lot of individuals don't put themselves as the administrative contact. They may put their website designer for a home-based business. They may put their ISP. They may put somebody else. Or maybe they put themselves. There's a lack of clarity about what really is expected there. And I wonder, I mean, I know this has been brought up with the registrars before, and I don't know what their reaction to it has been, but especially in a system that operates across many, many countries, and there may be great, very different expectations about who the administrative contact should be, and perhaps if those expectations were harmonized a little bit, people would have, you'd feel a little more comfortable about that.
Thomas here, could I get into queue, please? I think Kathy was before me.
Yep, exactly. So first Kathy, then Tom.
Gordon, this is Maggie. Can I just finish answering the question?
Yeah, actually, is that okay, Kathy, if we have Maggie jump in first?
I'll try to remember the question I had for Steve.
Okay.
Sorry, thanks. I want to make this quick statement because I need to jump off and get to another meeting. But essentially from our point of view, we do see it to be reasonable and appropriate to provide a specific need and to show that need for accessing the information. We don't, however, equate that with that same reasonable standard being with getting a court order or launching some kind of legal action in order to get it. I think those are two very different things, and in fact it makes, if that becomes the standard, it makes a lot of people who have a legitimate need and who want that information for a purpose other than to file some kind of civil or criminal suit, it would make some of them just go away not getting the information they have a legitimate right to access, and it makes some of them continually file lawsuits where there's really no need to do so, and that ends up harming the registrants themselves. So we don't see that as appropriate or reasonable to make that the standard. And I guess to the extent the due process is equated with a legal or a court action, then it kind of falls all into the same bundle.
Great. Thanks, Maggie. Okay, Kathy?
This is Phil. Maggie, are you going to be on for another minute or two?
I'm sorry, are you talking to me?
Yes.
I can stay on for, like, barely a minute, and
okay,
I will try
good.
To do that.
My credit card is ending. My calling card is ending. I have to call back in, so I'm going to get off and get back on. So I guess I'll yield to Thomas and then get back in.
Okay.
I'll be back on about 30 seconds.
Thanks, Kathy. Okay. Thomas, do you want to pose your question or comment?
Just to comment to what Steve just said. One, about the mother and child example, what kind of information and who is will trigger what kind of action? If you see that something does not look like it's a serious, reasonable, responsible website provider tracking children, who's dealing with their data appropriately, etc., you would say this is a bad site for a kid to go to. One particular example for this kind of information, for information that does not provide this evidence, is no information. So that particular example, I don't really see how forcing registrants to provide information does any good. It creates an incentive to provide wrong information. If they don't provide information that may be actually more useful to the data user than false information. That's one point. The other point about the roles of administrative and technical contact. Administrative contact has a specific role in the transfers policy. As a party besides the registrant that is entitled to acknowledge or to deny a transfer. So this is a role that can exercise significant control over the state of the domain name registration, and it's not a role that can be easily assigned to just any party out there. There is some uniformity in that respect, and the uniformity is getting stronger as transfers policy is being implemented.
And it's the same thing for most of the CCTLDs as well.
Okay, Kathy's back. Kathy?
Yeah. Maggie, are you still on?
I am.
Okay. Can I ask a viewer question, then a question for Steve, and apologize about getting off and on. this need sort of due process for the information. I can understand there are reasons to reach out to a domain name holder, like if you want to ask them if you can buy the domain name, and you don't want to go to court to get a court order on that. I can see that. What if a process were set up where someone could show a need and they wouldn't get all the personal data, because there are real concerns about that they could go off and stalk. They could kind of create an artificial need and then go off and stalk the person. But what if they got something short of personal information, like an email address? And there's good incentive for that to be accurate, because it's not going to be, say, publicly posted, so you don't have to worry about the spamming issues. But an email address so that they can start the contact.
And then if there never came a response, would I be able to go back and say, I've tried to use the information you gave given me, it doesn't work, can I get more information? Would I be allowed to do that? Because if whoever's receiving the email never responds to it, then the email becomes useless. Here's the problem as I see it. I can send you an email saying, I want to buy your domain name, and you could just ignore me. So that's one scenario. But I could also send you an email saying, listen, you have child pornography on your website. I want to know who you are so that I can shut down your website. Chances are you're not going to respond to me. So in those instances, can we just say the email should be all that you get, and, you know, that's all that we should do until you have some kind of legal action or some kind of court order. And the child pornography issue may be a bad example in that a law enforcement agency would, in fact, take up legal action
quickly.
It could also be someone trying to, as we discussed before, you and I, it could be someone spoofing Disney, and I'm, as Steve said, a parent trying to figure out exactly who this company is or who this website is, and it's not so clear what their purposes are. It's not so clear whether they're just someone who wants to say, oh, we have characters that are more fun than Disney, or whether they are in fact trying to pose as a child-friendly site and somewhere down the line establish relationships where they then draw children into kind of a trap and do whatever with that information or that contact information.
But as a consumer, you're not going to be
not
that anyway, aren't you? You're going to hand that over to law enforcement, right?
Well, I don't know. Am I or not? If it's not clear to me, if I'm not getting what I need back from that email that I have sent inquiring, I don't know. I think there's a lot of gray area, and it's, you know, what if I forward this to law enforcement and they are not seeing something that is instantly clear as to whether it's right or wrong, and they're not taking any action. And I think there's a lot of instances where it's not going to be perfectly clear. And what happens in those instances where by providing an email address, you're not getting anywhere, then what? Can you go back and say, I haven't gotten anywhere with this information, so then give me the next two pieces of information, and I can try again with that.
And what if I ignore the letter you send, and what if I ignore the calls from your caller ID? You're not going to visit me physically then, right?
Yeah, I don't necessarily see as limiting information to a single element is going to be useful. That's my point.
Let me just also point out that, you know, along the lines of what Maggie suggested,
sorry
there
to jump off this call, but I have a meeting that I need to get to, so I apologize again, and I'll look forward to our next discussion.
Maggie,
I still got a question.
And John, a brief one-sentence response to what Maggie just said. The point is not, is one element very useful? The question is three elements any less useless? I think that's the question here. I'm sorry for jumping in.
Sure, no problem. Let me just add, I mean, I think, Kathy, that one other thought with regards to your suggestion that perhaps the only way to get access to this information is through some sort of legal process, would be that there seems to be, in this country at least that I'm aware of, there's some laws that require action, and I'm thinking specifically of like the DMCA and Pennsylvania's anti-child pornography laws, which requires someone like an ISP to take action once they're made aware of content of a certain type, even if they haven't yet been served with a actual legal, you know, lawsuit or something like that. So is there a way to reconcile those needs with your proposal?
Absolutely. Let national law prevail. Let's not have ICANN making these decisions.
I guess what I'm saying
registrar,
is...
No. I think that's the answer, is that we shouldn't be drawing these lines. It's not for us to decide. I don't even know, you know, child pornography is a subject of huge numbers of, you know, lawsuits, and, you know, certain judges saying they know it when they see it, and other judges saying it's not so clear. I'm not sure making the allegation makes a child pornography, you know, as much as I hate the stuff out there. So what we're talking about, and I think Steve hit it on the head, is how does a company go about establishing its legitimacy when it's reaching out to consumers? So when Steve's daughter is surfing and gets to a site that seems questionable, if Steve can go to the Who Is, and if there's some accurate information that pops up that helps him better understand that website, and I've probably got even younger kids than Steve, so I'm very concerned about this, that information can help show legitimacy, and I completely agree. I just happen to think that information, that legitimacy, should come from the company gaining an additional element of trust by putting out information, putting out accurate information. What I've kind of tried to provide, and, you know, you can change the elements of data, but that there's this gray area of people who would like access to the information, but it's falling short of a legally ordered process. They want to ask questions. They want to buy the domain name. They want to, you know, they may want to ask, you know, they may want to ask questions to the domain name holder about the content, and there's no email address there. All sorts of reasons. And maybe we can provide some piece of information to help facilitate contact, but something short of exposing that domain name holder to physical harm.
Jordan, this is Steve. Can I ask a procedural question?
Sure.
I may have missed this because I was late on getting on the call, which I apologize.
Hello?
Steve, are you there?
Hello?
Oh, hi, Steve.
Hi, did I drop off there?
Yeah, we missed your procedural question if you asked it.
Oh, I'm sorry. We're 10 minutes past the closing time of the call, so I wonder when we expect to close and what the next steps would be.
Yeah, I was actually just looking at the clock, and I think it is probably, you know, time to wrap this up for the day. I think, you know, we're starting to see, you know, I think we've had some good dialogue today, and I think the danger we have is as a task force is, you know, having a lot of, I guess, philosophical dialogue without being able to translate it into concrete policy recommendations, which is ultimately what we need to do. So it sounds like, though, as part of our dialogue today, we've had a couple of more concrete ideas crop up, and I think between, you know, there are also some other concrete recommendations in a few of the constituency statements, such as the registrar's sort of tiered domain system, and I think there's also the recommendation in the IPC constituency statement that some actual additional fields be added to the Who Is data that we ought to discuss at some point. So what I would like to do is have on our next call, which is on Monday, is to start to have some talk about some specific concrete ideas that we've outlined now that we've had some of the sort of wide-ranging philosophical discussion at this point.
Jordan, what concrete ideas do you see coming out of today's discussion?
Well, I think, you know, you've made a proposal, I think, in terms of, you know, displaying, and I don't know exactly what, and maybe this is already outlined in your constituency statement, but displaying some small set of data through Who Is and then requiring that a subpoena or whatever, some sort of legalistic mechanism be used in order to obtain access to additional information. And you've also made the idea that you display, you know, an additional subset once a need is demonstrated without getting to the sort of legal requirement. So those are, I think, two concrete ideas that have been discussed. And then, like I said before, the registrar constituency contains some concrete ideas in their constituency statements, as does the IPC. So, and there may be other things I'm not thinking of as well. But what I would suggest is that over the next couple of days on the list that people might outline specific ideas that they like to have discussed on Monday's call, and then we'll choose three or four of them to actually, you know, maybe we can work some of them on the list, and then three or four of them will actually center the dialogue on Monday around in terms of trying to advance the policy discussion into some specific recommendations.
So we should propose these on the list?
Yes, I think that would be useful.
Okay.
And then we can have initial discussion on the list, and you know, it may be that we'll have some very similar ideas, and we'll look to merge them on the list so we don't have to have discussion about all of them necessarily on Monday. But and then we'll choose three or four of them and discuss on Monday. That sound reasonable to everyone?
Sounds good.
Silence is compliance. Okay. Okay, great. Well, we'll wrap this up then, unless anyone has any comments they're dying to make before we hang up. No? Okay, great. Well, thanks, everyone, for joining the extra call this week, and we'll be back at our usual time on Monday with some discussion of the ideas that people propose to the list.
Okay.
Thanks. Thanks, Jordan.
Thanks, Jordan.
Clark, Bob.
See you guys.
Bye.